Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host and study guide author. This week we are continuing our series on the biblical book of Isaiah. Our theme is the crisis of leadership. And our leading question is, to what extent is God prepared to twist our arms as he did Isaiah's in order to persuade us to enter his service? So, what do you think about that? Will he go to the end of the earth to persuade us? Will he twist our arms?
In some examples, he does. It looks like he does. He argues with Moses, and Moses argues back and has almost like no chance. Jeremiah is complaining about his work as a prophet. With Isaiah, we have chapter 6 and this overwhelming experience of God's presence and the vision and the way it is described. How can you resist that?
There's also a bit of, like, whenever I read the call narratives, for instance, that you just mentioned, Isaiah, Jeremiah, it takes me back to the Moses narrative as well, and the idea that I don't think it always starts out so like a twisting of an arm. I mean, Moses was, he's described as wandering, you know, in the wilderness and then seeing the bush that's burning, you know, something that he wishes to turn aside. He says, I'm going to turn aside and look at this great sight. And it seems that sometimes we get really extreme accounts where it feels like, oh, God has just grabbed them by the back of the coat and dragged them over to this job. But perhaps there's a full range. And even when we do get extreme examples, I wonder if there's an element of curiosity, of wondering, what would it be like to participate in this?
When I deal with this in my classes, I give them a whole string, and you mentioned several of them, Moses, there are some other stranger ones, Jonah, Ezekiel, Isaiah, it seems to me, comes closest to free will. But on the other hand, if I had the sound and light show that Isaiah had, I think I'd be pretty quick to volunteer. But there's no question that God works with people, and with Moses, he comes again and again and again, and every time he turns around, Moses gives him an excuse. Till finally the Lord says, enough, Moses, go, and I will send Aaron to be your spokesperson. And that, I think, is fairly quickly seen. Now, there's a question here, and I hope you two will be able to help us deal with it, because in Isaiah, he comes up with this statement, and it's part of his call leadership. He says, go and say to this people, keep listening, but do not comprehend. Keep looking, but do not understand. Make the mind of this people dull. Stop their ears, shut their eyes, so that they may not look with their eyes and listen with their ears and comprehend with their minds and turn to be healed. In Isaiah, then, the verses that follow list dire consequences for not hearing and obeying. Then I said, how long, O Lord? And he said, until the cities lie waste without inhabitant, and houses be without people, and the land is utterly desolate, until the Lord sends everyone far away and vast in the emptiness in the midst of the land. That sounds pretty grim. Can you help me to find out the practical purpose of saying, you just keep on preaching, the people are going to understand less and less. The more you preach, the less they'll understand. How do you address that question?
When I read these lines that you've just read for us, it reminds me of the widespread use of futility curses, which in the prophetic literature more broadly, I mean, they pick up futility curses from the wider ancient Near Eastern covenant and loyalty oath language. For instance, you know, may you build houses, but someone else live in it, right? Plant a vineyard, someone else eat the fruit. And then in the descriptions of the transformations that will come along the way that God imagines, the people imagine a new way in the midst of desolation, those are often reversed. So again, they're part of this larger rhetorical sort of patterning. And so when I read this, I start thinking of other places in the book that pick up similar language but reverse it, and I wonder if it's part of a larger maybe conversation happening even within the collection that we see in Isaiah.
Okay.
Jesus uses this passage from Isaiah in when he speaks parables in the Gospels, and he cites this part here. And it seems that we may have a way of understanding Isaiah through the eyes of Jesus in the Gospels that could help us make sense of it. When he says, I speak to them in parables, in images, in pictures, so that they don't understand. Is it possible that he speaks to them in parables because they don't understand, and so they need relatable ways of addressing important topics of God's kingdom, and still understand only very little if they do? So the dull ears and the blind eyes are with us because that is the way our understanding is in the first place.
Yes.
And then that image is then able, if we see it, when we hear it, is able to like spark something in our hearts, in our minds, and open our minds to it. And we will have to come back to it again and again because the understanding is still not there. It needs repetition. It needs another and another time to reflect on it.
There's another verse in Isaiah 42, and we'll come to this, that speaks more readily of the positive response. A bruised reed he will not break, and a dimly burning wick he will not quench. He will faithfully bring forth justice. Those who are sensitive will respond, and I think that's very important to recognize that as part of God's dealing.
I think it's also important for the prophet himself, for the one who is called to do this work, to know from the beginning what he is going to encounter. He will not be accepted. None of the prophets were accepted and listened to. So it's kind of like not a speech to the people, but a speech to Isaiah, who is part of who is in this calling in chapter 6, so that he understands what he's going to face.
Which raises a very interesting question, Matilda. Did any of the prophets enjoy being prophets? Did any of them want to be prophets?
I don't know of anyone. We rather know of several of them, how they resisted and how they... We could even use the word fought against it, and you mentioned Jonah last time. So he is going to lengths to get out of it. And we see that with several of the other prophets.
Within the context of the Adventist community, I have my students read Ellen White's autobiography that's in the first volume of the Testimonies. And I've had a number of young ladies say, you know, I used to think it would be wonderful to get visions like Ellen White did. But as I read her story, that's the last thing I would want to do. So the Lord finds people, asks them to do the work.
It's almost like being caught up in something. If you think of people who are speaking up for various issues even today, they often will describe their experience as being caught up in something. I just was reading someone very involved in the labor movement like 100 years ago, and she would never have chosen that work, but she was caught up in it just by being in a time and a place where this was what's needed. And when I read the prophetic text, it seems like they feel that. They're being caught up into something that's already happening and that will continue after their lives, and in a sense... Like Heschel talks again of using the word pathos, They feel with God.
Yeah. You know, that reminds me of when I was academic dean. I don't know of anybody who has had as a career goal being an academic dean. And when I went to conferences, a goodly number of them were kind of wandering about, just, you know, what's this that's happened to me? You know, I didn't want this. Now, the topic of our lesson for this time is one that I think we ought to pay a little closer attention to, a crisis of leadership. And when Uzzah died, it was, King Uzziah, when he died, Isaiah got his vision. And the question I want to raise is the relationship between strong civil leadership and strong religious leadership. We didn't spend a lot of time talking about it, but in the first lesson, we listed the four kings under which Isaiah served, and it wasn't a really terribly positive bunch. But I'd like to direct that question to you, too. To what extent does strong civil leadership and strong religious leadership go hand in hand?
Well, in Isaiah's time with this King Uzziah who died, he reigned for a long, long time, and it says he was a good leader. So it looks like during that time Judah prospered, and the spiritual part probably prospered in that same way. We do not have a lot of evidence, I believe, on that in the biblical story. But when he dies, he was sick for about 10 years already. So that leprosy event that happened had brought about a complete change, and Isaiah comes into that situation.
Yeah. Well, there's no question about that having a strong leader can make a difference. And one of the interesting things is when you read the book of Judges, that when they had a good judge, everything went fine. But as soon as the judge died, people went their own way. And so that's a factor which we still have to consider today. Well, as we look to next week, and I want us to be aware of what's happening next week, When Your World Is Falling Apart is the theme, and we're going to be looking at the next chapter of Isaiah 7, and this is a very important chapter. Our time is up. Grateful thank you to Jody and Matilda for their contribution to our conversation today. My thanks to Luke Irvine, who assisted with the recording today, and to Rick Baskett, our program engineer. He's the one who puts things online for us. And a grateful thank you to all of you for listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.